This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. My name is Josue Cardona, and with me this week is Kelly Dunlap.
Oh, I love the dramatic tension. It's so good to be back.
Welcome back. Kelly, so much has happened since we last spoke.
Oh,
Uber has self-driving cars, like, on the street now. There's a fleet of those. Apple announced an in-ear computer, like the movie Her. Donald Trump is the Republican candidate for president, okay? It's a completely different world than the last time you were here.
Yeah, it's a little bit more Terminator than the last time I was around.
it's a completely different world, I'm telling you. Oh, man, it's good to have you back.
Well, it's good to be back. I mean, I enjoyed the break. I'm glad that SciTech has such a generous maternity leave policy. And the little guy is doing great. And I've been able to listen to the episodes I've missed while up at 2 a.m. doing feedings. So I feel like I've been here.
Good, good, good. Now let's see if we remember how to do this like we used to.
Okay, okay.
We got some great listener feedback this week from listener Kristen. She had a suggestion for a topic that we should cover. And I ran it by you. We're like, yeah, let's do that one. So that's what we're going to talk about this week. Kristen suggested an article from the IEEE Spectrum, which is the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers.
I bet they have a great Christmas party.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I used to be a member a long time ago. Haven't paid my dues in years. The article was called EEG Identification Can Steal Your Most Closely Held Secrets. That sounds cool, right?
Dun, dun, dun.
EEG is an electroencephalogram. That's if you've never had one done, if you've seen the movies when somebody puts a whole bunch of little pads or nodes on somebody's head to read their brainwaves, that's what an EEG is. And the article is kind of cool. Have you gone over it? Did you see what it was about?
It's about stealing our innermost secrets.
Yeah.
Or rather, trying to get us to worry about that it can. We'll get into the article, but basically the idea is that they're brain fingerprints type of way of identifying different individuals and what they did.
Yeah, and so there's actually been a lot of talk about and research, because there's been research going on in this about biometrics, right? So usually, you know, now we do, your phones probably have a fingerprint scanner. We, in the movies, you see retina scanners, right? So they're scanning your eye. In the 90s, there was a lot of, you know, taking out eyeballs and cutting fingers to get into locked doors. But this is, we're talking now about using brainwaves as a biometric measurement, right? To find out who you are, to prove that you are you, we can kind of take a scan of your brain. And apparently they are, you know, more unique maybe than even fingerprints and things like that. And there's a very interesting way that works, because your brainwaves are constantly changing. They're not like a fingerprint that is always static, right? So if you've ever seen kind of the readout, it's just, it looks just like a crazy wave, right? One of those lines going up and down, you know, it does not make a lot of sense. But of course, you know, common theme on the show, the more data we have, the more processing power we have, the more we can pull from that data. And that's kind of what this article is talking about. But if we're moving forward and using brainwaves as a biometric, what are we losing then? Because your fingerprint doesn't say anything about you except that you're you. But your brainwave can say a whole lot more.
Yeah, and that's what the article kind of gets into, is on one hand, you know, the idea of it being an identification system is pretty cool. Just kind of the same way that I use my fingerprint on my iPhone to just seamlessly access something. I think it does create, I mean, how cool would it be is if you just walked into a bank and it could read your brainwaves and you could automatically have access to anything. You wouldn't have to go through the PIN. You wouldn't have to go through verification. Like, I think it would streamline a lot of things. But of course, anytime there's a technological advancement, there's also something that we lose or we risk losing. And in this case, you know, privacy, I think, is the biggest concern when you're allowed to look into somebody's brain. And I don't know about you, Josue, but there have been so many times in my life when I've been sitting there and thought, I am so glad this person cannot read my thoughts right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. I can relate. I can definitely relate to that. Brainwaves are a funny thing, right? Brainwaves are nothing more than a reading, or what comes up on the EEG, right, is a reading of the electrical impulses in your brain. So, you know, neurons are firing, there's electricity running through your brain, and that kind of creates, right, that impulse creates a wave that is being picked up. And it's really hard to read, right? So even if you could see it, it wouldn't necessarily... We're at a point now where it doesn't really mean anything. So we're kind of doing something like, let's say we were going to set up our phones to read our brainwaves. Okay. Mm-hmm. And instead of it reading, I don't know, let's say that when to lock it, right, or to create the actual password, what would you do is I'd say, okay, Kelly, this is your password. I want you to think of a unicorn sliding down a double rainbow. I don't know.
Right? Oh, so there. Right? So there.
So that moment when you start thinking about that and you picture it in your mind, the graph that comes out of your EEG looks a certain way.
It looks like a unicorn sliding down to... No, I'm sorry.
It does not. It does not. Right? But it would be a particularly specific and unique form of just messy graph data. And if I do the same thing, it would look very different. So, and maybe you thinking about anything else would not look the same way, right? So then to unlock your phone, now that's the thing you would have to picture in your mind. And once that signal was picked up by the phone, then it would unlock. So you could map that to a specific word. You could map that to specific things, but it would be very, very unique. And that's kind of the way we're doing it. It's not like, okay, right? Picture an apple, picture a green apple in your mind, you know, and then now it's like, it's reading that you have a green apple. It's not that. You're kind of showing it that when I'm thinking about this, this is what my brainwave looks like, and that's what it's looking for. So yeah. In a sense, it's not as psychic as you might think, as it sounds at the beginning.
No, I think that's a good clarification to have, but it's just not reading your mind. You know, if you're hooked up to an EEG and you think about a unicorn sliding down a double rainbow, it's not going to know that that's what you're thinking. But if it tells you to visualize that and then you come back an hour later and it has you visualize it again, it's going to be able to match up the brainwaves in theory. And according to this article, it's been doing that pretty accurately. I think it's at 100% in one case.
Yeah. Yep. There was a study where they had a whole bunch of people come in, do exactly what I said, and then come back later and then confirm exactly who each person was. It never made a mistake because the brainwaves are so unique.
Yeah. That anytime anything in psychological science is 100%, it makes me suspicious, and I want to go dig through the data and the procedure. But it's an interesting idea. And you know, we talked a little bit about safety and privacy and ethics, and we're going to dive much more into that. I think it really hasn't been an issue so far because an EEG is this giant, elaborate headset. You would never not know that you were being monitored, and other people would never not know that you were being monitored. But the article makes a really good point that, as with all other pieces of technology, the EEG is going to become cheaper and more portable, and you might be able to just walk around with it on you at all times so that it can measure. It's like a Fitbit for your brain. So instead of just measuring your pulse, it can measure all the stuff going on in your body and give you, again, tons of data that you know, probably can't even – don't have the time to interpret all of it. But the idea that it could be it's part of that idea of body hacking – you know, putting technology into our bodies more than we already have, and the potential dangers and privacy issues of having something hackable in our bodies.
So I will say that the 100% thing, right? I think the reason why it's very likely. And the reason why brainwaves as a biometric is exciting is because it's essentially binary, right? It either is this thing or it isn't this thing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's literally like practically a switch, right? It's yes or no. And to your point, right, the we're not going to be wearing skull caps with like all these electrodes on them. Right now, there are way smaller ones. I've seen ones that are just a headband and only have a couple contacts, and then one of the cooler ones I've seen is an earpiece. So just like an earbud. And it has an EEG built into it. So imagine having headphones, right, that go into your ear. And actually, this is one of the reasons why, you know, Apple just removed the 3.5 millimeter jack from its phone. So yes. Now you can't use your regular headphones. But that's cool because now all headphones that you connect either – if they're wireless, they're already powered. And if you plug them in directly, now they can pull power from the phone to do things like have a built-in EEG, have a built-in heart monitor, and do all of these other things. So this one model that I saw that had, you know, would measure your pulse and measure your brain waves and also act as headphones, that wouldn't be possible without connecting to either a USB Type-C or a Lightning port on your phone. And be that small. It would require some sort of battery pack to be able to do something like that. So that's just like one of the cases for the argument to move past 3.5 millimeter jacks because, like you said, we want to integrate technology and have all this data, you know, constantly. And that's a more efficient way to do it. And we're definitely there. You know, it may not be as precise yet as having electrodes all over your head. But we're getting pretty close. And especially like an earbud is like, it's pretty close to your brain.
Yes, can confirm the ear is close to the brain.
Yes.
There's very few things we can confirm in psychology. So the fact that we can confirm that, I feel good.
Yeah, yeah. And again, like to our point that we've, something we've said multiple times, we're still figuring out how the brain works. And these brain scans are just gobbledygook. But we're able to take that and give it some sort of meaning. And I got a few cool quotes from a few different articles. One said that the manipulation and inspection of EEG data can provide information on parameters such as neurological health, attention, memory, emotions, arousal level, and psychological state, right? So we're moving into a world where now we can pull that from this mess of a graph that we had before. And the more points there are, the more accurate it is. Like there are different frequencies, right? Frequency is the speed at which that electrical impulse is happening. So at different speeds, we get different information. That's when you hear people talking about alpha waves and beta waves and things like that. Those are just different speeds at which this information is coming out. So the more sensitive the device, the more information that can be taken. And then, you know, machine learning will help us learn what those different things are, like how to identify an emotion, how to identify a psychological state. And when you put it like that, like now that's kind of scary because you can't turn off your brainwaves. You're always emitting them. Mm-hmm. So even though we're talking about a device that would either go on your ear or go on your head, what happens when that technology is so refined that there doesn't need to be physical contact. And we can scan and pick up all that data anyway.
We have an awesome new season of Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Made real.
Yeah, actually, so one of the things I told listener Kristen when she wrote in was to check out, there's an anime series called Psychopass. And it actually takes this idea in a very Black Mirror way, to the extreme. To imagine you live in a world where there are these brain scanners everywhere, and they're constantly scanning everybody to assess psychological states and emotional states. How does that sound to you?
Not good. Like, I'm out of a job.
Well, for starters, yeah. So the show has a few very interesting things. If you just watch the first episode, in the first 10 minutes, you'll see that there's this crime division, right? Like these, detectives, and they're sent out to go catch somebody. And so there's this crime division, two detectives show up, and one of them is briefing the other on the case that they're about to start. And one character tells the other, the street scanner flagged the perpetrator during a hue check. He was ordered by a security drone to receive therapy, but he panicked and ran. His recorded psychopath was Forrest Green, so we can expect his aggression and compulsion to be high. Okay? So that's one of the first things you hear in the show, which means that the street scanner scanned this guy, picked up something about either their emotional or psychological state. They have this chart with these different colors and what they mean. And just by that scan, they're expecting particular behavior from him. And one thing that you learn later is that people are tagged as essentially being latent criminals, right? Depending on this brain scan. So obviously, like, it sounds a lot like Minority Report.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah. But Minority Report is like, oh, we can see into the future. This is taking it in a more, you know, closer to what we're talking about now, which is we can scan your brain and say, like, whoa, like, psychologically, this is where you're at. There's a potential for crime in the sense of the show. We need to go do something about this, right? And then even crazier, I mean, you said be out of a job. Every one of these officers has something called, has a weapon called a Dominator. The Dominator is a portable psychological diagnosis and suppression system. It scans a target's psychopath, which is their brainwaves, and only fires if the target is a latent criminal. So the cops like take the gun and point it at someone, and if it'll scan them again, and depending on their threat level, it will either allow you to pull a trigger or not. And depending on that level, it'll pull a paralyzing shot or a kill shot. There's a whole show based around that idea.
Okay. I think until the next season of Black Mirror comes out, I'm going to need to watch this show and maybe have a couple of episodes on it, because it's very interesting. And especially with this EEG article, not that far away, which I think is both exciting and scary and interesting, and definitely has a lot of room for examination and ethical. Lots of ethics involved in here, I'm getting the sense.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I've been wanting to talk about this show for like a year now. And so I'm glad when Kristen sent this, because it obviously like brought that right back. It would have been way more speculative a year ago than it is talking about it right now. It almost feels weird because I've thought about this topic many times and thought about the show. And I've actually never watched the whole show. I've only ever watched the first two episodes. Before today, I watched the first two episodes again. And they say so many things in those first two episodes that just get you thinking about what the world would be like if something like this was, again, taken to the extreme. And now, of course, obviously, the privacy issues are huge, because that's, again, that's not something you can turn off. There's a character in the second episode who mentions that he was flagged at 5 years old as a latent criminal. And because of that, he's never – like, so many opportunities and chances were taken from him because mm-hmm. – and that's just been, you know, his life. And he was told that that he's always a latent criminal, and he's treated as such in this society.
And that opens up the whole can of worms that we see in education research, that if you tell a teacher a student is a bad apple, the teacher subconsciously and sometimes consciously treats that child different. And then if you tell them this one is a super bright kid, then they treat that child different. And that you see the outcomes in these children where, even though they were of equal intelligence before, the one that's treated as the dropout, you know, kind of fulfills his destiny. What is that phrase? I'm totally blanking on it. But basically, when you fulfill a destiny that somebody's already put out there for you. So the kid who was treated as...
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Thank you. Self-fulfilling prophecy. That's what that makes me think of with this character is, you know, if you're treated like a criminal, I guess you kind of I would imagine you have to internalize that at some point. And that, I mean, again, the ethics and everything of the whole idea of innocent until proven guilty is out the window. And I think that's one of the most interesting things that I found with this article and as kind of the impetus. And then most of the fictional developments around this kind of, you know, not quite precog type of scenario is it always tends to focus on criminality, on bad mm-hmm. things, on the criminal justice system. So I know that EEGs have been used to in place of polygraphs, so lie detector tests, to see if there are more, because you can cheat a lie detector test. There's lots of websites dedicated to telling you how to beat a lie detector test, and they aren't particular. I mean, they're not admissible in court because of their, you know, not necessarily reliability. This the article that looked at that also, I think, only had about an 86% correct rate, which sounds high for a lie detector test, but that still means there's 14% that it got wrong, which to me is too much. But yeah, and then this psychopath one is all about, you know, criminality, and you're a latent criminal and you're going to become aggressive. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of focus on what would happen if it could predict good things, or if it could look at you and go, wow, you know, you're feeling really awesome today, or you've got lots of extra energy. Why don't you go help this person who's feeling down? It always seems to be really focused on the negative. And I'm not sure if that's part of our human fascination with dystopias and why dystopias are so much more interesting than utopias yeah. or not. But I've always found that to be somewhat
disappointing.
Kind of somewhat yeah. grim, yeah. A very grim prediction of our future. And friend of the show, Jay McGonigal, I'm going to throw it out there, has been running a class at Stanford on how to think like a futurist. And the subtitle is Improve Your Powers of Imagination, Invention, and Incapacity for Change. Since I don't live in that area, I can't take the class, even though I would love to. But I did check it out, and she has her required textbook on there. So I, of course, picked that up. And that is The Inevitable by Kevin Kelly. So I've been reading that.
Which I brought up on the show before.
Yes, yes. And one of the most important things I've taken away from the book so far is this idea that anytime there's a technological development, there's always a concern, a kind of a retroactive backlash of some kind, which we've talked about on the show extensively. But the part that I think that maybe I haven't talked about enough or I haven't thought about enough is that how society always comes back to deal with it. And the example he used was cell phones and the ringtone, because when cell phones first came out, there was no silence option. So there was all this concern about ringtones disrupting business meetings and education and all these other problems, and which was a legitimate concern. But then you figure out a way to deal with it. And of course, in the case of a cell phone, it's the silence mode. So I think it's important that as we explore all the scary possibilities, because I guess that's the most fun thing to do, to keep in mind that there's always something new and we always find a way to deal with it. And I'm pretty sure we haven't really ever had a, you know, a collapse of society as is predicted by, you know, fear mongering. But, you know, I guess there's always a first time for everything, right?
VR is going to do it. That's the one.
Yes. And then whatever comes after VR, and then whatever comes after that.
Yeah. Actually, you know, a lot of things you said made me – I didn't want to make this whole episode about kind of the examples in Psychopaths, but it does – damn, okay. I think you're really going to want to check this out. Like, again, this is
yes.
all in
no
the first
spoilers.
Episode. Yeah, this is just the first, like, 15 minutes. When that guy, that perpetrator, gets flagged, he does you hear his like internal monologue. He says, well, then now if I've been flagged as a criminal, then I'm just going to act as like a criminal.
Yeah, you might as well.
Yep. And he goes and he kidnaps a woman. And then after he is dealt with, she just had a traumatic experience. So her psychopath is gone, mm-hmm. is now looking not so good. Because she's literally still in the moments after the trauma, and they deal with it very poorly, in the sense that they're going by these automatic scans, and the scan of her is now not good. And I won't say anything more about that, but later on one of the officers is like having lunch with friends, the friends just casually bring up like, oh, you went through all that and your psychopath still looks so good. Like, how do you do it? You know, it becomes this, it's almost like, you know, you've heard people talk about like auras and things like that, right? It's mm-hmm. almost like if everybody can see everybody's psychological and emotional state, they can actually see it with a device, you know, and everybody's kind of monitoring it. And it's just a part of society. And I think it's a great thought experiment. And I did think of a few different ways that this kind of technology could be used in our, you know, like be used. Again, you mentioned the ethics of it. And there's all these weird things like, you know, let's say you have kids.
Let's say, right? Hypothetically, let's, if I had a
hypothetically,
child.
Hypothetically. Let's say. And let's assume that this technology is, you know, kind of, you know, readily available. And you tell your kid, like, don't even think about, you know.
Dessert,
like,
before dinner.
Exactly. That's exactly the what I wrote down. Right? And you can actually, since you know exactly what the brainwave looks like when they think about dessert before dinner, you could have it like set off an alert on your phone, essentially, right? It's like they're thinking about that chocolate cake. You're like, no, hey, what did I say? No, go to your room. You know, like you could set up things like that. A more serious one would be like, I better not catch you thinking about your ex-girlfriend or your ex-boyfriend or something like that, you know?
Ooh.
And then that comes up. Like you can just imagine all the problems that this could get all sorts of people in because – like you said, what was it? You said earlier, how you know, the many times you've thought, I'm so glad that nobody can read my mind right now.
Yep. Right?
Yeah. That may, like, it's possible that we may have to wear, like, magneto helmets so people can't scan our brains. That's the solution to this, by the way.
I mean, it reminds me a lot of what we talk about in therapy when we were doing, you know, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy with somebody, is that just because you think something doesn't mean that it's real. So when you're dealing with depression or anxiety or any other kind of thought-based disorder, you're going to get thoughts like, so, for example, you know, I'm no good, I'm worthless, I can't do anything right, I'm never going to get better, or, you know, even if you're having thoughts of self-harm, things like that, you know, being able to realize these thoughts are not, they're just thoughts. That's all they are. They're not necessarily real. They're not necessarily true, you know. And so the idea that something could pass through my head, and you know, like when I'm driving and someone cuts me off and I have a moment of road rage, or I'm gonna kill you, you mother effer, and then get flagged because my latent criminality of I want to murder somebody. And I think that's something that in this kind of hypothetical world we'd really have to take into consideration, because human beings have millions and millions and millions of thoughts a day, so many of which are even out of our conscious awareness. And part of what makes us human is that we don't act on what we think. You know, you can think that, you know, I really want to punch that person in the face, but I won't do it. And that's, I feel like a strong element of humanity, because animals, as far as I know, don't have that kind of inhibition. So I think it would be really difficult to suss out what is a thought and what is an intent, I guess.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good point. Hopefully, like, as you combine all of those things together, you could kind of map that out. Look at me. Like, I'm like, it's inevitable. This is what's going to happen. This is how we fix it. but on the something I was thinking is, like, maybe on the diagnostic part of it, we could have – because, you know, there are – a traumatic event can lead to intrusive thoughts, right? Thoughts that you don't want to have, but they're coming in. And, you know, compulsive disorders kind of are built on that too. And at least maybe we could measure that, right? We're seeing over time how that one intrusive thought is happening less and less over time. And we can actually measure progress in a way – progress of treatment in a way that we couldn't before.
Well, it's kind of like the polygraph where if that's where the place that it went to, I think I would be okay with it. So for example, the polygraph is not admissible in court. People realize it's flawed, but it's just a tool in a series of events. So if this was used as a tool, I think I'd be okay with it, as opposed to, you know, judge, jury, and executioner. So for example, in the article, that our listener sent in, Kristen, it talks about how the EEG scan was used on a group of alcoholics and non-alcoholics to find if it could suss out which one was, had a pattern of alcoholism from their brain patterns. And it was 25%, I think, of what they, of like correct positives. So, I mean, even putting aside all the, you know, the ethical stuff, as a clinician, I think that'd be kind of cool if I could give a client a heads up. You know, if you have, some, I mean, I guess that's what not really clear in this article, whether or not the accurate identified 25% of alcoholics in the sample. So it identified people who are already alcoholics. To me, what would be useful would be if it could identify people before they became alcoholics.
Latent alcoholics, just like latent criminals kind
of thing. I'm thinking more from like a health standpoint of, you know, you can do tests right now. You can get an entire genetic scan to say, hey, you're predisposed to diabetes. You're predisposed to cancer. Here's some proactive things you can do to try to mitigate that. So I think if someone, I mean, like right now, if we know that alcoholism runs in families, and so if your dad was an alcoholic, you know that you have a increased vulnerability to alcoholism. So I think that might be a use for it that I don't see as horrible. Obviously, it would have to be very regulated and be careful with it, because the rest of this article dives into what happens when we have this kind of technology and then people are able to hack it. Mm-hmm. And it's not just losing your credit card information anymore. You lose, I don't even know. Is it self, your soul, your identity? I mean, like in the sense of ego identity.
Issue. Yeah. 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 And I mean, I like, and that's why I meant like, you know, reframing latent to predisposition. That's a big difference, right? Because now we're talking mm-hmm. about finding something that we can keep an eye on and be proactive toward and help you with versus putting you in a box, you know, and taking it as a foregone conclusion. That's where the optimistic side of or the optimist in me, you know, is looking at this technology and looking at things that we can do. Like right now when you do like genome testing and things like that, it's hard. Like I've debated many times about doing some of that genome testing because I know my family has a whole bunch of health problems, and I don't know how I would deal with like this long list of things that I – with percentages of how – what my predisposition is to all of these different things.
And then if you found out, you know, how would that affect your – you living your life? I mean, how would that affect your mental state? It reminds me a lot of like Huntington's disease. You know, if your parent had Huntington's, you have a 50-50 shot, and – Huntington's is a degenerative disease where I think you live to about like 20 or 22. You die really, really young. And, you know, people can choose whether or not to find out they have it. And I mean, that kind of just personal decision of do I want to find out and how that would affect your life. I have a hard time even wrapping my brain around, you know, I think the closest thing that I have is, you know, going for my annual checkup for like mammogram and pelvic screening and things like that. And that's just a screen. That's not even predictive. You know, it's, again, you said like a binary. You have it or you don't. Yeah. Or there's something suspicious, but you go check it out. So I can definitely see the advantages of, you know, hey, you're predisposed to diabetes, so you really should stay away from, you know, the sugars and the refined carbs and things like that. Versus, you know, you have, I guess maybe it's different because it's something you can manage, as opposed to, hey, you have a 30% chance of getting colon cancer that will be untreatable. You know, how does that change the way you look at yourself and you live your life? I don't even know. I have no idea. I can't even wrap my brain around that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we could do that in terms of, you know, psychological health, emotional health, like what would that be like? That's, again, it's different, right? Like I feel like we have more control over what food we eat than the experiences that happen around us. I mean, you know, there's like a deeper conversation here to have, but your point is exactly how I feel about it. There are things that I don't know if I want to know, and I especially don't want anybody else to know, which is kind of the point, right? Like I want especially that stuff to be private, and it could potentially, because we are, imagine that our brains, because there's just electrical impulses going off, we're like a broadcast antenna. Mm-hmm. And we're always broadcasting that information. So what happens when people can read it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the information's out there. And like you said, people can't necessarily read it yet. But I'm sure there will come a day, probably most likely in our lifetimes, where, you know, brainwave data is just kind of part of our daily life. And we just kind of go through the motions the same way that, you know, people went through life before the internet or before they could tell time. You know, you find ways to cope. And then when something technologically advanced comes along, you adapt with it and you roll with it. And humanity hasn't collapsed yet. So I think that's a pretty good track record so far. yeah, I think it's just going to be a matter of, you know, let me rephrase. Yeah. Technology moves so much faster than regulation. So yeah. I think there's a lot of value in kind of future casting, like we are right now, predicting what are the good uses for this and what are the negative uses for this, because it's going to be a long time before the regulatory bodies catch up. So I think there's a lot to say for individual ethics and individual morality on the frontier of technology.
Yeah. And I'll give you one more piece of future forecasting.
Okay.
In reference to a long time ago, one of my favorite episodes is the memory episode that we did. And so if our electrical signals, right, if our brain scans are electrical signals that we are emitting, in that episode, we talked a lot about how you could implant a memory or a thought by taking that electrical impulse and imposing it onto the brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like the more there's research that shows that that's kind of possible too, but that's kind of like the darkest timeline version of everything that we're talking about, where not only can people hack, right, your brain by reading everything that's there, but what happens then when people can then just like impose another electrical signal into your head, and then it kind of, and your brain starts reading it. Kind of, again, that idea of broadcast antennas, the hacking would be not just an invasion of privacy, but an attack, kind of Inception style stuff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And that comes right back to mental health, because what you're describing is a very associated with, you know, more psychotic disorders, believing things that aren't true. So, I mean, it would be, you know, hey, I am President Kennedy. No, Josue, you're not. Yes, I am. And I believe it. And you can't shake that belief. And me as a therapist would go, okay, you know, we have an unshakable belief. We've got some kind of delusions going on. Let's get you on some medication. So I think that, yeah, definitely some very scary potential there for people to mess around with your thoughts, your beliefs, your memories. But there's good sides too, right? gotta try to balance it out, man. Yeah. So I don't know. I guess we'll see where it all comes out. But it's very exciting. And I'm sure, as we always have, we'll freak out about it. We'll figure it out. And then we'll move on to the next thing that we freak out and figure out.
Let me just say that I am excited about this kind of subgenre of psychology science fiction that I'm starting to see. I'm very excited about this. It's also good content for the show, but I'm really liking this. I'm watching Mr. Robot lately, and
I need to get on that.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm creating this genre of psych sci-fi, where it's not, you know,
you just call it sci-fi.
We will not.
You always hate my labels. I don't know why.
There's a reason.
just call it sci-fi. P-S-Y.
I gotcha. Yeah, I know.
Will ensue.
I'll think about it, Kelly. I'm glad you're back. I don't want you to go away because of this.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. Is you shut me down so many times. I needed a month and a half to recover.
Oh, man. This was a good talk. It was so good to have you back.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen, for the article. And hopefully you enjoyed the conversation that we delved into. And as always, we'd love to hear from our listeners about other things that they either want to hear about, thoughts they have about what we've already talked about, because it just makes the conversation so much more rich and interesting when you get so many different perspectives on it.
Yeah. And hello to all the new listeners out there, too. Things are going well on the site.
Listeners. Psych Tech. And of course, be sure to check out Headshots, our other podcast. It's more gaming centric, but it's still our two lovely voices talking about cool stuff.
If you're into that sort of thing. And that's at headshotspodcast.com. For more Psych Tech, go to psychtechpodcast.com, at Psych Tech Cast on Twitter. Kelly is at Kelly N. Dunlap on Twitter. I'm Josue A. Cardona on Twitter. And we'll be back in 2 weeks.
All right. Bye, guys.